You're listening to What the Folklore, making sense of senseless tales.
You can support us on Patreon and join our Discord server at patreon.com/WTFolklore.
Tra-la-dee-dee-ha-dee-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-dee-dee-ha-dee-ho, the princess, she walked happily home. Tra-la-dee-dee-ha-dee-ho, she lived happily ever after.
Gordy, you bastard.
Yes.
Back.
From?
The FBI.
Were you gone?
You were here. You were here when they raided. You called them.
I did. I told you I was calling them.
Well, I
escaped.
You wanted
to speak to the manager.
I escaped. And I'm back, and I'm going to inflict a story on you. Welcome back to What the Folklore, Making Sense of Senseless Tales. I am your storyteller, Carmen.
Gordy, call the FBI again.
I should let them know you escaped.
It wasn't even a week. They are slipping.
Yeah. Christopher Ray.
We didn't even get a full seven days of rest.
They're a little distracted now. I am the storyteller, Carmen.
Crime Weaver Tyler.
This is a good one. I am Gordy, the groom of Diggum's Cloaca. Thank you. Thank you, the Davinator.
Diggum's like the cereal frog?
D-I-G apostrophe E-M.
I think that's the cereal frog.
Well, I'm the groom of the cereal frog's cloaca. It's not where I expected to be.
You deserve it.
Yeah, sometimes that's what happens.
Sometimes it's how life does.
Also, congratulations on your nuptials.
Thank you.
I hope that you have a long and happy marriage to the cereal frog's cloaca.
Me too, apparently.
All right, you too.
Yeah.
As penance for last week's nonsense,
mm-hmm.
We're going to Denmark, and I'm going to tell you a tale.
But I read the Chinese story again.
Yeah, no, I'm punishing for you for that too, just on principle. You for the Chinese story, Gordy for the FBI, both back in the hot seat. One of those is more severe than the other. I'll leave it to you to figure out which is worse.
I mean, they're just doing their jobs.
So I'm going to read the two of you a fairy tale. I'm pretty sure you have not heard this one before.
Try me.
You will. I will. I will try you.
Continuing the oral tradition.
You will interrupt me with nonsense.
Never.
Per the usual. We will probably reinvent this tale a little bit, and then we will try to fix it for modern audiences, pointing out all of its flaws as a storytelling medium and attempting to patch it up into something, or getting distracted along the way.
Folklore's gotten a pass for a long time.
It has, and we're here to round them up.
People sourced them or like heard them and wrote them down and have not been willing to address those problems.
Yeah, do you think they even looked?
They like, were just when like, they, oh, when this they wrote is popular.
Yeah, they wrote it down and that was it.
And then people just like reprint them.
Yeah.
This is the first time they've been read since then.
It's kind
it's
of
us.
Read critically, I think. It's kind of like the Twilight franchise. You know, everyone's telling these stories. Everyone's excited about them. Let's not look too closely or edit the shadows out of the green screens because people will pay to see these movies anyway.
Cool, cool.
So that is what folklore has gotten away with for a long time, and we're here to shake them up. So today we are going to Denmark to read a Hans Christian Andersen tale because it's been a bit since we've seen old Hans.
We're just dusting off all the old classics.
Yep. This one was suggested to us by Diana B. Thank you, Diana.
Thank you.
And the story title is The Girl Who Trod on a Loaf.
Trod on a loaf.
Yep.
What kind of loaf?
Well, you'll find out, but I think we have a sponsor for this week's episode.
We do have a sponsor. This week's episode is sponsored by VIP patron Jen, who has officially been deemed Arne Thompson type 1387. A woman draws beer in the cellar.
Does she draw beer in a cellar?
Well, she said that she's a beer snob, and she's also in Georgia, which is the cellar of the states.
It is at the bottom, almost.
Yeah.
What is Florida,
the
then?
The sub-basement.
The underseller. Is that a good wrestling persona?
The underseller.
I mean, there's an undertaker.
Right.
So someone's got to be on the other side of that.
The underseller is very bad at conveying their moves.
Well, thank you.
They're just not committed.
Thank you, Jen. And have a wrestling name. Bonus.
Yeah, you can be that too. Thank you, Jen.
All right, are you two ready for your just punishment?
Let's trot on a loaf.
Trot on a loaf. Trot on a loaf.
I dare say you have heard of the girl who stepped on a loaf so as not to soil her shoes and all the misfortunes that befell her.
Gordy,
I have questions.
Have you?
She trod on the loaf to avoid spoiling her shoes?
Yeah.
That's the opposite, though.
What was the other option?
I mean, you've heard this one, right?
No.
The story believes you do.
The story's wrong. This is why we're here.
The story really thinks that you've heard this.
Well, story's fucking combative.
There's edit one. This opening is alienating. This is not gonna play at the foreign box office. We need to take it out.
Anyway, even though you two have totally heard this story before, here it is again.
If a movie tells you that you've seen it already, can you get a free refund?
Can you just leave?
I guess I'd seen it.
That is a bad
one. My mistake. Money back.
That'd be.
That's how Jurassic World opened.
Like, you go into, I just saw The Incredibles 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Maybe wait to rent it. But, like, if I went in and sat down and they were just like, actually, it's Shrek. You've seen this one before. That'd be kind of crazy. Or if it was just the first one again. Like, this movie you're about to see, you've seen it. We're playing one you've seen.
That's an incredible bait and switch. Is that you spend months promoting a sequel to a movie. And then people get there and they're like, we didn't make one. This is the first one again.
This is just movie one. Remember movie one?
Thanks for your cash, sucker.
Or here's that film from our competitor that everyone's been making fun of recently. Have that.
Yeah.
Enjoy. All right. So anyway, here's that story. This girl was a poor child, proud and arrogant, bad disposition from the very beginning.
Bad to the bone.
Yeah. She's like, comes out an arrogant infant.
She's George Thorogood.
You know, unlike other infants, just full of herself.
I don't know that I've ever seen an infant with enough personality to be a dick like that.
Just a born Holden Caulfield.
Yeah. Like, you come out discerning.
You have the catcher in the rye in your hands as you're born. And a well actually on your lips.
And some,
you have a book report on the catcher in the rye.
Can you be born with a well actually in your mouth?
It's the baby's first words.
Send it back. Send it back or trade. Well, actually,
start yelling for the fairies to bring you a changeling. This one's broken. All right. So when she was quite tiny, her greatest delight was to catch flies and pull their wings off to deprive them of flight. This doesn't seem like out of the norm for a kid, though. Like a little kid.
Yeah, I guess so. How little are we talking?
It says quite tiny.
It becomes questionable when she upgrades to birds.
That's true.
Yeah, if she moves beyond flies and if she sticks with it, then there's cause for concern.
And I think I've maybe mentioned once on the show, my sister used to take apart ants and try to put them back together because it reminded her of the Cooties game from childhood.
I had not considered the damage that game could do to a child, apparently.
Or to the parent, who then has to wash the child's clothes, and as she's shaking it out, finds just like a whole handful of ant bits in the pockets.
That would be very disconcerting to find, like, dead ant parts, like in discrete bits, not whole ants.
Have you ever asked her why?
Ask my sister?
Yeah.
No, she doesn't remember doing this. It was because of the Cooties game, though.
Well, no, I understand that, but why wasn't the Cooties game enough? Was she trying to go pro?
Yeah. What was she not getting from the game?
She just needed additional practice.
She just wanted Cooties all the time.
I mean, is that what you have to do to get into, like, the pro circuit?
Yeah. It's just constant practice putting those things back together.
It's a lot of pressure for a kid.
Well, she bore it well, and the...
Yeah, it was the no many, skin off her ass, apparently.
The many tiny lives sectioned off in her pocket lay testament to that. and then she eventually graduated to Beatles, which she would stick onto a pin, and then she would wave a leaf or a small scrap of paper near enough to them that the beetles would grab it with their feet, trying to get off the pin, and then she'd just delight in their struggles as they're attempting to remove themselves from the pin, shouting things like, look, the beetle's reading the paper, because it had a piece of newspaper or something in its hand that it was moving around in an attempt to unimpale itself.
So her beef is with bugs.
Yeah.
With the concept of flight.
No. It's just, yeah, she's anti-bug, which is also not that unusual for a kid.
I feel like that's the opposite.
Being anti-bug?
Yeah.
You weren't like, well, this is anti-bug in a very deliberate way that's maybe unusual.
I feel like a lot of kids are like, cool, bugs.
Some of them are, and then some of them are scared of bugs.
Yeah.
I ran into the pantry once because I saw a bee somewhere in the yard, and I stayed there for a while.
So you needed a windowless room.
Yeah, I needed a panic room.
To chill
room.
For a bit.
A bee panic room.
A panic room full of food. Pantry.
Hey, tell me that's not a good plan.
Well, when the bees come, I'll be the first to join you in there.
All right. So her behavior grew worse as she got older in specified ways, and she was a very pretty kid, so no one like beat her for misbehaving. So they didn't like punch the bad behavior out of her.
Like you do to Uggos?
Yeah.
For fear that she would become an Uggo.
This does not sound like a good society.
No kidding?
I don't
only only beat the ugly kids?
This is in Denmark?
Yeah.
That sounds messed up. Oh. I mean, Denmark's not like that now, I'm sure. But
isn't that what Santa does there?
Beats the ugly kids?
Yeah.
Does he?
I think so.
Yeah, with a Krampus. That's what the Krampus is. It's just wails on them. Anyway.
Danish.
Her own mother Santa. Said at one point, "It will take a heavy blow to bend that head. As a child, you have often trampled on my apron, and I fear when you're grown, you will trample on my heart." And this she did with a vengeance.
She did what?
This kid is about to trample on mom's heart with a vengeance.
Yeah.
But when is the loaf, though?
Well, that's part of the vengeance.
Oh.
Okay, so she was sent into service for some rich folk who lived in the country. Poor kid. So, that's what you do. They treated her like their own kid, probably because she's pretty.
She's pretty.
Yeah, and they dressed her in really nice clothes. And that, when combined with her growing beauty, made her even more proud of herself. After about a year, her employers said, "Hey, you should maybe go visit your parents, little Inger."
They call her Anger?
They call her Inger.
Inger.
I-N-G-E-R. Or Inger. I don't know.
Integer.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if this was her name all along, or if her employers renamed her as part of the privilege of having an employee.
Ingy.
Little Ingy. Little Ingot.
Lingit.
So she went out, not out of any like sentimental feelings toward her parents, to just show off how grand she was now. I don't know what her job was. Like, I don't know what work she was doing, but pretend daughter, I guess.
She returned home like it was a high school reunion.
Yeah, essentially.
Check how sweet my life is now.
When she made it to the town gate, she saw some young men and maids gossiping near the pond, and among them was her mother, who had a bundle of sticks that she'd picked up in the woods.
Okay.
Probably for fire? Not clear.
I mean, or just for fun.
Everybody has their hobbies.
So Inger turned away from her, ashamed that someone so fine as herself would have a ragged old woman who picked up sticks as a mother.
Again, not clear if it's for a profession or for fun.
If my
mother's like hobby was just like walking around in public picking sticks up off the ground, I might take action.
Would you? I feel like that's an innocuous hobby.
But what if your mom was a professional stick picker?
That's fine. If she's on the pro circuit, that's. But like,
yeah,
when
but
you're,
hobbyist
when you're,
stick pickers? Nah.
When you're a kid or maybe like early teenager and you are like predisposed to be embarrassed by your parents, I feel like walking around in public and just picking up sticks for no good reason.
So she's upset that her mom is a filthy casual.
That her mom's not in the pro circuit.
She's not into tree sports.
Yeah, she's not. If her mom got serious, it'd be different.
So ashamed of her mom's casual status, she goes back to her employer's place, and another half a year passes, and her mistress says, "Yeah, you should really visit your parents. They're like getting up there in years. Here's a really big loaf of bread for you to take to them as a gift."
What is her job?
Be there.
Kid's job?
Yeah, just be there.
Just be present?
I guess.
What are her responsibilities?
They pretty.
Do, yeah, wear a dress? Pretend kid, maybe. I don't know, they're not really clear on what she's supposed to be doing. So she takes this loaf of bread, she puts on her finest clothes and her brand new shoes, and on her walk she holds up her skirt and steps really carefully in order to keep her shoes nice and clean. But she reached a part of the marsh that was really muddy, and there's no way around it. So without a second thought, she threw the loaf into the mud to use as a stepping stone.
The baguette?
Yeah, something like that. Some kind of loaf. Could be anything. Focaccia.
Is it absorbent?
Is it hard?
Yeah, it's like a... I think it's more like a country wheat loaf.
Can it bear her weight?
Well, as she stood with one foot on the loaf and shifted her weight to put her other foot out for the next step, the loaf sank and sank with her into the marsh until nothing was seen. Black bubbling pool.
Oh, that was the deep-ass marsh.
Yeah.
Just in that spot, yeah.
Yeah. Also, did the story just explain what walking is to us?
Yeah, it did.
She
bore her weight on one foot and then prepared to lift the other to put weight on it.
If only they had baked her like a bread bodyboard. Boogie board like you take to the beach.
Or like a bridge.
Yeah, like a very long baguette.
Or like a bread hang glider would be sweet.
That's what we'll see on the next seasons of the various American baking challenges. It's like, make us a hang glider functioning out of bread.
I wish it were the British one.
I bet Paul Hollywood could make a bread hang glider.
I want to see Mary Berry do an extreme bread sports.
Maybe she can be a guest judge, because I can't see the British one being that ridiculous and over the top. That is a very American baking show sort of thing to do.
Yeah, it's a shame.
But maybe they can bring her on as a guest judge to do sweet stunts.
Mary Berry is back for the next season.
That is important news for everyone.
Good to know.
All right, well, that's the story.
That's it? It just ends there?
But what happened to her, though?
Yeah, that's my question.
Well.
Did you write more?
She went to the Marsh Wife.
The Marsh Wife.
Ugh. Boy, wait. Okay, a lot happened in the last two sentences.
Yeah.
So the story's done.
Yeah.
But this is like a frame story.
Yeah, like it was reminding you of the story that you have definitely 100% heard before.
Okay.
Oh, that's all the part that we'd heard.
So all of this
fresh.
All of this is, I guess, Shrek 1 played at like 10 times speed before Shrek 2.
Yeah, right? Basically,
like you've seen this movie and then it plays in like 10 minutes
right.
Very fast.
Now we're
last
all caught
time
up.
On Dragon Ball Z.
That would have been helpful for The Incredibles too, because it's been 14 years and I don't remember.
You didn't rewatch it before you went? You just went cold?
Are you
saying the joke of playing the movie very fast before the new movie would have been helpful?
I would have enjoyed that,
yes. It would have been a refresher.
That would have been helpful to just see, like, what happened in The Incredibles 1 again? Oh, yeah, okay. Even just like a summary.
Syndrome.
I sort of dimly remembered Syndrome, but I was having trouble like placing.
What's that guy all about?
I was getting it confused with Megamind.
Mm-hmm. Because they're superheroes.
Yeah, because they're superheroes and there's like a redhead boy who flies and gets mad. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredibles is redhead boy who flies against mad part one.
Yeah.
And Megamind was redhead boy who flies against mad part two.
Yeah. And so
there isn't a redhead boy who flies in either of those movies.
There absolutely is in both.
They're not.
Syndrome is a redhead boy who does technically fly
He flies a bit and gets mad.
And he gets very mad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in Megamind, the villain is Titan.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Who's a redheaded boy who flies and gets mad.
Okay. I am wrong. And I've seen these briefly, like recently because of camp, but like I was thinking the main cast.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anyway, she went to the Marsh Wife, and the Marsh Wife has a brewery. Ugh, that is a tough word to say. Under the marsh, and she is the sister to the Elf King, aunt to the Elf Maidens, and these people are well enough known, so we don't need to get into them.
Yeah, we've heard of them.
Sure. I mean, I do have questions, but
the marsh.
I am certainly more interested in this bog woman.
Yeah. Look, can we stick with her, maybe?
The Marsh Wife was a more mysterious figure than they, but she is known for the mist that rises over the meadows, because that's a sign that she's been brewing.
Booze?
Marsh booze.
So if you go out early in the morning and you huff those gases.
Get some sweet.
You get alcohol in there?
Little bit.
Or is that just bad for you?
It's probably fine. I mean, you don't get a lot of alcohol from like smelling beer. So.
Yeah, I don't know that I would like, I probably wouldn't go into like an actual brewery and just huff whatever gases are in there. That seems...
Actual breweries smell pretty nice.
Because of all the beer?
The hops.
How about one that's a swamp?
They're probably not so nice. And this one isn't. Like, this is some nasty beer.
Swamp dew.
So the brewery was a nasty smelling place full of filth, toads, and snakes. And it was also icy cold, so when Inger fell into it, she shuddered from her head to foot, and her limbs grew stiff, and the loaf stuck to her feet.
Cement shoes.
Sort of,
but
yeah.
Bread.
Both feet?
Yeah.
Or does she have, like, one hardened bread foot now?
Gordy, did you miss the part where she put one foot down and then lifted up the other one and put that foot down?
Yeah, I thought it meant, like, lifted up from, like, she lifted up her back foot from solid ground, put it on the next part.
Mm-hmm.
Well, regardless, she's got 2 feet to loaf now. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in the fall to the marsh booze house.
And instantly frozen.
That's how cold it is down there.
Just encased in bread.
So the marsh wife was at home, where Bogey and his great-grandmother were paying her a visit.
Bogey?
Old Bogey.
Bony?
Maybe?
Yes.
Tyler declares. The great-grandmother is a venomous old woman, and she is never idle. She's always making gadabout leather to put in people's shoes, so that when they wear them, they cannot rest. And she embroiders lies, and she strings together idle words to make mischief of them.
Is this the bog mother?
This is the great-grandmother of old Bogey.
How are they related?
They're visiting the marsh wife.
Marsh wife.
Not bog mom.
Okay.
I do really like the imagery of embroidering lies, though.
Yeah.
And it says that she's like really deft with a needle, like excellent at knitting.
Yeah, Bony's grandma's making housewarming gifts that just say Pizzagate on them.
I was going to say, is embroidering lies like the thing, the cross stitching that says like home is where the heart is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There, but it's not. Yeah. We'll go with what you said.
Yeah. But it's Pizzagate is where the heart is.
Pizzagate is where the heart is. You got where I wanted to go. Just faster without having to check every step of the way.
I do appreciate that you went back through, though, to make sure the foundation was strong.
you got to the right place.
Gordy's our rules master. He's got to make sure that we're, like, staying within the rules of the world we've developed.
Well, he's like a building inspector, but for jokes.
Just sort of a referee.
Like, is this joke load-bearing?
Are you up
to code?
In this case, you've got all the right permits, I assume.
Your egress windows are the proper size.
All your electrical outlets are spaced out enough.
You're not claiming a bedroom in a room without a closet.
Yeah, it's all fine.
You're good.
This is tip-top shape.
All right. So the great-grandmother sees Inger and looks through an eyeglass at her and then declares that this girl has got something in her. And I do kind of want a souvenir of coming to visit the marsh wife.
Has got something in her?
Yeah.
Blood.
Probably. She'd make a good statue in my great-grandson's outer corridor.
I mean, she's already frozen.
Yeah, she's there already. So she took her with her, and that's how Inger got to Bogeyland. It is rare for someone to get to Bogeyland by so direct a path as this, but it's real easy to happen upon it.
Now, called this story The Girl Who Trod on the Loaf.
Yeah.
When the title Inger in Bogeyland was right in front of them.
Yeah.
Seems like wasted potential.
It really does. So the corridor where she was put was in fact never ending and is described in sort of a Lovecraftian way, like it's dizzying to look at.
Right, but she doesn't go anywhere, so what does it matter?
I mean, the corridor outside of Old Bogey's place.
Are they looking at it?
She's been put into it
as a statue,
as a decorative item.
But she can see in her frozen state.
She's not dead. She's
aware.
Yeah.
It's not like cryogenic.
No, it's more like sleep paralysis, but
she's just having
but like forever.
Constant night terrors in her paralyzed state.
Right. So the never endingness of the corridor makes you dizzy to look at it.
I'll say that's a bold way to tell a story through the perspective of somebody who's going to be frozen for a lot of it. Like that's innovative.
And
even like now, if there was a movie about that, I'd be interested. Honestly,
there is one. It's called The Diving Bell and the Butterfly.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, because it's about the guy who what does he have?
He got in a motorcycle accident and was paralyzed and could only like blink.
Paralysis. Yeah, yeah. They put the camera on the wheelchair. And they had like a rig to do the blinking.
So in this never-ending corridor, there was an ignominious crew that stood waiting for this door of mercy to open, and long they may stand, because apparently they're like just bad people, just like shitty souls waiting for mercy.
So is hell
basically
bogey land?
Kind of.
What?
It's described sort of like hell.
This whole what is
bogey land,
which is where
the corridor
underground.
Where is it? I need a map.
Denmark.
Okay, I need a map. Denmark is up top.
Yeah.
So like
then you go down the bog.
Yeah.
Into what?
A brewery.
The brewery.
And then somewhere, because these people were visiting.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the network of underground is this never-ending corridor.
Yeah.
And Bogeyland.
So the corridor in Bogeyland, or it leads to Bogeyland?
It is in Bogeyland outside of Bogey's Palace.
Bogeyland neighbors Japan Hell and Space Jam World.
This is a hell of a Dark Souls sequel we're building.
So this part gets like really fuzzy in the story's description. So
is it still a story?
Sort of.
In the strictest sense of the word, I suppose.
Or is it just like describing things?
It's mostly just describing things and sort of vaguely. So in the corridor, there were also great fat spiders who were spinning 1,000 years webs around her feet, whatever that means.
Just to like keep them in the bread?
Just to keep her in place.
She's okay. Sorry doing it, but you do you, spider. I'm not going to tell you how to do your job.
They spin webs that are measured in years, so who knows what's going on with Spiderland. Mm. And every soul who was in that corridor suffered the unrest of constant torment. And it sort of sounds like some of the Greek trials they undertake. The guy who has to roll Sisyphus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That style thing.
Yeah.
But then it's like, we don't want to describe all of them. Let's move on. So I didn't describe any of them because it doesn't matter.
Yep.
All the people who were waiting and being tormented would stare at Inger with evil passion shining from their eyes and speaking without any words falling from their lips. They're just like staring at her and like mumbling.
Mouthing crazily.
Yeah. So she figured that she was so pretty that they got pleasure from looking at her, but she didn't like account for all the slime that covered her from her fall into the marsh wife's place.
And the webs.
And the snake that had gotten into her hair.
There's a snake?
Yes, just in her hair.
Cool.
Or the toad looking out from every fold in her dress, croaking like an asthmatic pug dog.
The toad's like on a dress expedition?
I think there might be multiple toads.
The toad looking out from every fold at once?
Yeah, this is Lovecraftian.
It is. I just paused to think about it for a second, and yeah.
But I really do like the simile of like an asthmatic pug dog appearing in a Hans Christian Andersen folktale unexpectedly.
Is a toad that's everywhere at once the antithesis of yonder toad?
Yeah, I think we might have.
Hither toad?
Hither toad is vile nemesis.
Expanding the yonder toad franchise.
Hither toad has a terrible breathing problem.
Yonder toad is somewhere very specific over yonder. Right. Hither toad is everywhere.
You look and hither toad is there.
Yeah.
Worse than anything was her terrible hunger. Her body was too stiff for her to bend down to break off some bread that she was glued to. So like constantly near food and never able to get it.
Yeah, but that food is like way yucky at this point. It's covered in whips and swamp.
Yeah, shoe bread is not very appetizing.
And also your stinky ass feet.
There were also so many flies just crawling on her all the time, and she kept wishing that they would fly away, but whoopso, these were the flies she'd ripped wings off of as a child, so they're not going anywhere.
And then the beetles?
That'll teach you, toddler. The beetles do not factor in.
They don't okay. Get
you get, you get a revenge. Pass. Get a pass for the beetles. Maybe the spiders were tagged in as their proxy.
That's a literature thing, right? Poetic justice.
Poetic tag-ins. She's sitting there, covered in flies,
and
trapped
toads,
by spider webs.
And snakes. And
And then a scalding tear falls onto her forehead.
Like a water?
Yeah, like a...
Boiling.
Like a salty tear that also burns. Corrosive cry tear.
So what's above her?
More tears fall.
Do you have a guess?
And then it's a whole rain of them.
I mean, Sauron.
Some crying big, hot, wet tears.
Yeah, lava tears.
Yeah.
Where's my ring?
I want it.
I made it special.
This is mine. I made it. I want it.
Now that little creep. Frodo Baggins has it.
Told it won't bring it back.
He's gonna bring it near me, but not close enough to grab it.
I don't have hands anymore.
Just a big eye.
What good are Urukai?
How close are we?
These are from her crying mother back on Earth.
That's a long way.
Because the tears shed by a mother for her child will always reach the child. Like homing beacons.
Is that good?
No.
Especially since they don't bring healing. They just burn and make the torment 50 times worse.
Why do they do that?
Wait, what was the phrase?
The tears shed by a mother for her child will always reach the child, but they
Her child.
Yeah.
So even if it's like the child is sick, right? Through no fault of anybody's, like just ill, and like the mother is upset naturally and cries, her tears will find and burn the already sick child.
That is probably not the story's intention, but they are vaguely phrasing it. So yes, by the letter of the law, that is true.
Yeah, stories work on rules. Think about what you're putting out there.
Yeah, like consider maybe bitter tears cried by a mother for her misbehaving child. Because that's probably what you mean, to scare the little kid listening to the story.
A mother's tears caused by her child in spite.
Yeah. And this way, like, if you misbehave and make your mom cry, she's going to burn you with her eye water.
If is child's fault equals true, then run the burning hot seeking tears code.
So her hunger had led her to get, like, really hollow. And as a result of this, she can now hear things said about her on Earth all the time.
Okay.
And pretty much all of them were hard words about how prideful she was, which included the words from her sobbing mother. I told you you were going to be the cause of my grief. Mother, and also everyone on Earth, including you two, had heard about the whole loaf sin, because the cowherd had seen it happen.
The whole what?
The sin of stepping on a loaf.
Is it a sin?
It is being interpreted as stepping on, like, God's gift to her.
Bread.
She was given it, and then she stepped on it in order to preserve her vanity.
Right.
It's also a gift to her mom. Well,
okay, I have problems with it, but we'll get to that.
Inger, hearing this for a while, starts to wish she'd never been born. She hears her employer say that she was a sinful child, and then she starts wishing that she had been brought up better and had the nonsense beat out of her, if any was there in her as a kid, because she's still not, like, 100% sold on the fact that she's not the greatest.
I was going to say she's sort of regressing, but wishing that you weren't born isn't taking responsibility for yourself.
No, it's just like,
it's the opposite.
I want to not deal with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even a little. Then she hears a song that was written about her and sung all over the country and bemoans her suffering so much for this. And she also starts thinking, well, you know, others have done shitty stuff too. They should be punished like I'm being punished.
This is sounding eerily familiar.
The telltale sign of a redeemed spirit. Why isn't everyone else being punished too?
So her heart grows even harder than her, like, stony exterior, and it's full of anger and malice. She hears people telling her story to their children, and the little ones all call her wicked and agreed that her torment was just. And so this has her sinking further and further into her malice.
Is she listening to us right now?
Yeah, she is.
She's what? Do they know?
Parents are telling their kids the story. Everyone knows the story of her trotting on a loaf.
Do they know the part about where she went and where she is now?
No, that's just the part that we're clued in on.
So they don't know. They don't know exactly how bad it is.
Yeah, just sunk into a bog.
Yeah.
She deserves it. But then one day she hears one child burst into tears and ask if Inger will ever come up again. Parents like, nah. It's like, what if she asked for pardon and promised to learn from her mistake? And the parents like, nah, she's not going to ask pardon. Have you listened to anything? Kid sucks. She's the worst. So the little girl offers up her doll's house if Inger could only come up again, because it must be dreadful down there.
Like collateral or as a place to stay?
Mm.
Clear. Maybe both. I don't know who she's offering it to.
Bogey.
Sure. I don't know that Bogey's listening. I don't know that Bogey gives a crap.
Probably not.
His great-grandmother put a statue in his never-ending corridor without consulting him because she wanted a souvenir from visiting a marsh wife, and one fell through the roof, so why not?
And for Christmas, she knit him a sweater that said, "The earth is flat."
So this like little beacon of kindness in all the words said about her did her a little bit of good, like softened up her heart just a touch.
Mm-hmm.
Years passed above, and she's talked about less throughout the course of this. And then she hears her mother, who is on her deathbed as an old woman, say her name and let her know what a grief she's been to her before.
Still.
Yep.
Inger, you were a right fuck.
You were awful when I had to deal with you, and now that you're gone, it's still true.
Peace out.
You've been gone longer than you've been around, and I still fucking hate you.
Well, I mean, specifically she says, what a grief you've been to me, which is not necessarily the same as hate.
Yeah.
So a long and bitter period passes after her mom passes, and then she hears her name again, this time from that girl who'd cried about her, who is now also an old woman
who's
dying.
Now a district attorney.
And dying of old age.
Dying district attorney.
And who, for whatever reason, in her last hour, remembered crying about Inger as a kid.
And like, the dollhouse.
Like, of all the friggin' things, she must not have led a very exciting life as a district attorney.
Rosebud.
So she remembers that story and crying over it, and then was praying that she hadn't trodden on the gifts she had been given and that she hadn't nourished her pride like Inger had. So, like, I guess she turned around a little bit on that tale. And then she died, and her soul eyes were open to see some of the hidden things.
Her soul eyes?
Yeah, so she's gone to heaven, essentially.
Yeah.
And since Inger had been so vividly present in her last thoughts, she saw now how deep Inger had sunk and burst into tears as a result of that. I'm pretty sure this at this point is still talking about kid old woman.
Yeah, the district attorney.
Yeah. And she stood in the kingdom of heaven as a child again, weeping for Inger. Tortured soul of Inger echoed with this angel's tears for her. Because it's the first time anyone in heaven gave a shit.
This is getting convoluted.
Yeah,
it's
no, getting, it gets really confusing.
It's getting very conceptual.
At this point. So Inger's soul, as a result of this, starts recalling its earthly actions. We're all kind of a bummer. Nothing like horrible. She didn't murder anybody.
Oh, she was just kind of mean.
Just kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that is less bad than like harboring a grudge about it.
This has
your
been
entire life.
Centuries of damnation.
Yeah.
And she melted into tears as Inger had never done. And as she acknowledges why the gates of mercy probably can't be opened to her, her stony form dissolves and a little bird flies out with lightning speed to the upper world.
Boy. Does it now.
It does.
Back to Earth.
Back to Earth. Bird was shy and afraid of everything.
I was 100% sure you were going to say the bird is shot.
And eaten.
With an arrow.
And eaten by a family in the end.
Served with bread.
It was a sandwich.
It was a bird sandwich. Lightning bird sandwich.
It was ashamed of itself and afraid to meet the eye of any living being, so it hastily sought shelter in a chink in a wall and cowered there for quite some time.
Oh my gosh, it's still going?
It sat for a long time before it like mustered up the courage to actually look around and then appreciated all the beauty of nature that had always been there during her life, went unacknowledged, but she couldn't sing about it like she wanted to because she had no voice. So the Christmas feast comes about.
Wait, no, the okay, Christmas hold feast. On, before summarize, like, very quickly what has happened.
Through the whole story?
No, so her mother...
Chuck Loaf and Bog fall through Marsh
right,
Wife,
like,
taken as statue souvenir to corridor.
Yes.
Sits there while people look at her, spiders crawl on her, and croaks
yeah,
asthmatically...
She has a bad time.
Toads asthmatically croak on her.
Feels mom's tears.
Yeah, mom cries acid.
Mom dies.
Well, first, kids hear stories about
sure.
her. People say mean things.
A legend becomes
yeah.
passed
yeah.
around.
Then mom dies, and the one girl who cried about her dies, turns into an angel, cries about her again.
Wait. Back up. What?
The girl who cried about her story.
The young one becomes, who offered a dollhouse.
Yeah, becomes old and dies.
Yeah.
And in her last moments, fucking remembers that moment of her childhood
yeah.
so strongly that when she comes into heaven, that's the moment she relives in heaven as an angel, crying about Inger.
Yeah.
Angel's tears, Inger's soul up a little bit. Inger looks at her past life and is like, ah, shit, I was a fucker.
But still frozen.
Still stone.
Yes.
But as she acknowledges why she might not be worthy of mercy, turns into a bird, but a very ashamed bird with no voice who's hiding in a chink in a wall. And now it's Christmas.
Yeah. And mom is long dead.
Oh, good. I haven't missed it. There's time still.
Mom is dead, right?
No, mom's dead.
Mom has
everyone she has known is old and died.
Mom has no part in this transformation except the tears.
Mom wasn't even cried acid at her. Mom didn't help her get better. A rando little girl who heard her story is the one who cried her into bird.
Okay. Worth just running through the bullet points.
All right, so Christmas feast comes about, and the peasants raised a pole against a wall and tied a sheaf of oats to the top of it so that the birds would have something to eat on Christmas Day.
Bird Christmas.
I could have sworn it sounded like you were approaching an end there. had all the signals like, oh, and then she realized something, and it was it was the end of the story.
No, it's the beginning of the end, though. So on the morning of Christmas, a bunch of twittering birds surrounded the pole, and from the chink in the wall came a feeble tweeting, for the little bird Inger had found her voice, and this was her first words, which were a hymn of praise spoken of birds, which is a sweet tweet. That's how birds hymn, I guess.
Yo, that's how birds hymn.
That's how they do it. So the bird thought of a good deed and flew out of its hiding place.
Okay. Thought, like, thought of one it could do?
Yeah.
Okay.
And again,
I'm going to bring sticks to another bird.
I will be the stick gatherer like I once shamed my mom.
It's time to be a stick picker.
It was a hard winter with thick ice on the water, and it was difficult for the birds and wild creatures to find food. So the little bird flew around.
Went back to hell and got the loaf of bread.
Finding grains of corn and morsels of bread, and when it found these things, it would eat just a little bit, like a tiny crumb of it, and then find other birds to give the rest to. So over the course of winter, the bird had collected and given away so many crumbs of bread that they equaled the loaf that Inger had stepped on. When the last crumbs were given, the gray wings of the bird became white, spread wide. Children who saw it said, a tern is flying over to the sea, which is what children would say when they see a bird flying.
Transforming.
Because they will give a crap. They just see it flying, and they're like, a tern! And then the bird dived into the sea and then soared up into the sunshine, gleaming so brightly that it was not possible to see what became of it. They said it flew straight into the sun. The end. Suck on that, you two. Just punishment, which is also the theme of the story. I think your punishment fits your crimes. Does Inger's?
No, she's still a kid. Like, you have time to correct that behavior. She's still learning.
Nah, she didn't get beaten early enough. She's broken for life.
She's still learning how to, like, be a person. You got time to teach her. Also, okay, if she was gonna cross a bog,
right,
and by, like, stepping into it, she would like, plunge straight down into, like, the swamp crone's den, or what is it again?
the marshwife?
Marshwife. Like, if you fall straight down in there, yeah, it seems reasonable that you would try to prevent that by, like, throwing something down to step on.
Well, maybe it was just, like, a little mud puddle, but the loaf acts as, like, a key.
That's different. Like,
because it's now a sin.
If we're purely talking about, like, physics and physical space.
Sin opens the door.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Don't waste food.
No, don't waste food. But, like, was the bread, like, that? Was it that important?
Her employers had a lot of money to dress their employee in very fine clothing and, like, send her on vacations.
Yeah, like, to, like, employed for, her to do nothing.
For, yeah, unnamed but services.
Like, but it's so bad that she, like, let's say that she just dropped it. Like, she just lost a loaf of bread. Is that as bad?
Probably not, because I think it was the deliberate, like, this loaf's for my mom, poor and hungry,
mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
I'm gonna keep my shoes clean instead. I think that's where the sin bit comes in.
Could they not have just sent her in, like, a carriage or something?
I mean, she's just a servant.
With some money.
That's a 3-year perk.
Not yet.
Yeah, she's still in her probationary period.
You don't get
period.
A company car yet.
Yeah.
She hadn't even gone through her review, which would have gone poorly.
Probably. It seems
yeah,
like
cause it seems like the mistress didn't think too highly of her.
Yes. Squandering food that your poor mother needs is bad.
Can I ask you guys something vis-a-vis squandering?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's your take on good deeds? Like, is every good deed as good as any other good deed?
Like, is there a good deed hierarchy?
Are they all worthwhile as good deeds?
Are they quantifiable somehow? Yeah.
What is your personal stance on it?
I mean, there are probably good deeds that are definitely way better than others.
There are. I don't want to get into the weeds of like, oh, this deed is a better good deed than that. Like, if you are earnest in trying to do some good deeds, then that's what matters.
Yeah, like any good deed is good. I think if you're going to introduce a ranking scale, like ones that require a little bit more effort, like sacrifice on your part, and then would be higher.
Yeah, and then it has to be sacrifice proportional to the resources you have available.
Can I contextualize this?
Sure.
Please.
If her fate was to come back as a bird, a shy bird, who then just did what birds do at winter, which is to like forage.
Right.
Yeah.
Like she still ate the stuff that she found, just not as much of it. Like she shared it was her good deed. Was that she like spread the wealth a little bit
to other
birds who would have been doing the same thing.
Sharing is caring.
Yeah.
If her fate was to do that and then to fly into the sun, is that worth the time of an angel who lived a full life, probably doing other good deeds?
You're saying is like the time and effort of this angel's
I feel
whole
like that's
life.
A squandered miracle.
Like the result of this angel's full life of good deeds was a bird shared with other birds
for one winter.
Yeah, if you
before flying into the sun.
Said, I don't want to get into the weeds of quantifying, but no, that does not seem worth it.
That doesn't seem equitable.
Well, if you think about it like this, you know, what she did is definitely a bad.
She did a bad, yes.
She did do a bad. Like, attitude was in 100% the wrong place.
There must have been a rock nearby.
Priorities totally screwed.
Sure.
Yes. Yes. She is not a,
my,
she's not
my
a good
My guess gin. Is, like, bird redemption, which is, like, a light... thing. Best way to justify it is like when a hospital overbills you and then some months later sends you a check with a whoopso attached to it. Like, she got overbilled for her bad times. Like, it was definitely not a good thing she did.
Yeah.
But spending centuries or a century icy cold chamber covered in spiders and snakes and toads, stared at by lecherous souls, acid falling on your heads while you hear everyone talk about how shitty you are.
Yeah.
That's probably an overbilling.
Yeah, it's not... what she did was shitty. It's not that bad.
I'm gonna reach like for something.
Of all the things you could do, it's probably on the slight end of the scale.
I'm gonna reach for something. You guys tell me if there's anything there.
Okay.
Being bestowed the thing that she originally deprived life of. Is there anything to that?
What?
She was given flight, which is what she was taking away as a child from bugs.
Oh, like the wings and stuff?
Flight.
It'd be...
Like, is there relevance to her being a bird as opposed to any other foraging animal in winter?
It'd be stronger if she was a bug.
It would have been.
If she was turned into, like, some kind of insect.
Yeah.
Butterfly, maybe.
A Christmas bug.
A red and green Christmas bug.
Doubt that the Hans Christian Andersen thought circular path.
Probably not.
Because he's also missing like the core function of the dramatic question in his story.
Mm-hmm.
Where like whatever redemption your anti-hero gets should directly relate to the problem that they have. Restoring bread by sharing with people does not reflect her character flaw.
I mean, in a very vague way, I can see it reading that way.
If you just like super simplify what her problem was down to selfishness, which is a part of it.
Yeah.
Like her behavior was very selfish, but it was a very specific type of selfish. She wasn't...
And it was selfish and letting it go to waste.
Right, because if she had just eaten the loaf by herself because she was better than her stick-picking mom, then this would make a little bit more sense as a redemption thing to, like, give up food.
She felt herself above the loaf.
Right, so it was pride thing, and I don't know that sharing necessarily...
Is the antithesis of pride.
Because you can be prideful and charitable at the same time.
Yeah.
So So, like, I think that the redemption period is a little weak.
Yes, in this agreed.
One from the problem that she has. But the punishment is way overkill.
Mm-hmm.
As Diana put it in her recommendation of the story, a girl who's sent to bog hell for bread crimes.
Yes.
That's what we've got here.
I would appeal if I were her.
Yeah.
Whatever appellate court she has, like, in that
Bogeyland.
Region. Yeah. Whoever she can get a hold of in Bogland who could maybe overturn the decision, I would give it a shot.
It'd be a small comfort after, like, centuries, but...
Yeah, but...
So, yeah,
know.
I guess I would, like, to fix this story, spend a lot more time on crimes. She
has to do a lot more to deserve this.
Yeah, she has to be a right bastard in, like, 100 different ways.
Or she's got to get some time back at the end.
Right.
Like, she has to get more than... Does she die when she flies into the sun?
I think the implication is, like, becoming an angel also, getting her full redemption, doors of mercy sort of thing.
Okay.
Like, I think that's the implication. Like, the wings turn white and she flies up, and that's probably why Bird also...
Choose to believe she flew directly into the sun.
Right, which is death.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Like the sweet release of death as the true final reward to
a true death.
To an eternity of bog statuedom.
Yeah.
Yeah, she needs to crimes way harder. I would also change the story to include a little bit more marsh wife Bogey and knitting great grandmother to Bogey.
Is it simpler to just stop at the part where it was the story that we'd all heard and then just like put that in a book for like spooky stories for teens?
I mean, yeah, it would be simpler to do
like
that.
She stepped on the bread and she sang in the swamp, "Don't be a bad kid."
But Tyler,
yeah,
there is an old grandmother
mm-hmm.
to someone who owns a hellscape
mm-hmm.
who embroiders lies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's very good.
I don't want to lose that.
We don't have to. They don't like factor into this story. They're just dressing.
That's true. So what if we just replace this story with their story?
Please.
Yeah, I would like to not pay any attention to this girl or her mother or her friend, and let's spend all of our time in Bog World with this weird Lovecraftian nightmare scenario.
Yeah, if you have Bogey stories, like if you're aware of old Bogey and his great grandma and other tales, send that right our way. We want that so hard.
Or any other
anything, like even if it's like extremely tangentially related. If you can get anywhere in that orbit, just send that right over.
Even if you have like know about any other sightings of Hithertoad,
Hithertoad
be down for that.
Great, yeah.
Yeah, because my instinct was the same as yours, Tyler, when old Bogey showed up on the scene. It's like, mm-hmm. this sounds like a bony.
I mean, it's most of the letters.
It could potentially still be a bony because there's still no concrete description of him or what he does.
Yeah.
Got a corridor. Bony. Probably keeps some tormented souls around for lols.
Absolutely.
That's his thing. I can see Bony having a great grandma who embroiders lies. Maybe that's the Baba Yaga. Maybe not. Maybe there's like older figure we haven't considered.
Embroidering lies. Is she documenting them or is she inventing them?
I like to think she's inventing
and
them.
And then putting them in the world.
I think she's creating them. I think that's the implication the story wants you to make.
Yeah.
It's like she's
the one that puts
she's
the lies
origin
in the world.
Point to these, to the lies and the restlessness and all of the other stuff.
She sows discord.
Yeah. And I love it. Be her.
Carmen, you're pretty close, I'm going to say.
Thanks.
With what we do every week here.
Yeah, she's one of my favorite characters we've ever encountered, and I want to see it a lot more. She has a spyglass, or an eye, like a glass that she like looks through.
Like a monocle?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love this old lie embroidering.
Detailed lies.
Monocle wearing grandmother to the owner of a hell. I love it. It's so good. I don't know what Marsh Wife's deal is either, but I want to know.
She makes booze. Very bad booze, apparently.
This nasty bog booze woman who lives under a marsh.
Stink drink.
Because I bet in Fairyland.
Come down to Bogeyland and get your sloppy stink drinks.
I bet in Bogeyland a stink drink's probably pretty popular.
That'll hit the spot.
Yeah, so I would fix this one by replacing it with their tale.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Forget Bread Girl.
I mean, just reverse it. Just have her happening in the background. And you just occasionally see, like, something weird's going on with that statue. I don't give a shit, but it's cool if you care about it.
Yeah, and the story is the stink drink tea party with Marsh Witch, Lion Broder, and Grandma, and Old Bogey. In the middle of it, some girl with some bread falls through the ceiling.
And they're like, that was weird. And they go right back to whatever cool things they were doing.
Package that one up for me. I want a souvenir of this visit, dearie. And then we just follow them as they do their life. It's like just a documentary.
It's like when they make, like sometimes they'll make like, maybe not movies, but I'm trying to think of other examples where they've done like an Ender's Game, Ender's Shadow situation where it's like the same story from different perspectives. But what if, but in this case, one is just like clearly way better than the other. Like there's a big debate. It's like, is Ender's Shadow or Ender's Game the better book? And like people have strong opinions.
Yes, we do.
Either way. And in this case, like there's a right answer and it's like, and it's Bog Family.
I mean, they do that in TV shows, I think, more frequently.
It's a Rashomon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would watch that.
It's a Rashomon, but what if in Rashomon, it's been a while since I've seen that movie, but one story, they're just like, yeah, this is the good one. I don't care what your story is, yeah. Bandit. We're listening to this one.
Everyone
again.
Else, shut up. We're going.
Shut the
we're
fuck
digging
up.
Deeper
guy,
into this one.
This guy's right. I want to hear more.
We're onto some wild shit right now.
Yeah, you start out normal Bog Girl story, like Loaf and all that. And you get into the Bong Wife thing and like suddenly the story just paces way faster to rewind to that point. And then we don't give a shit about Bread Girl anymore. We see this bird fly into the sun in the credits scene. Poof. That sounds like enough. Thank you, Diana.
Thank you, Diana.
Thank you.
Good pull.
Yeah, thanks for introducing us to Bog Family because we love them. General shout out to listeners. Find more Bog Family. Send them our way.
Bog Family, please.
Official Bog Family request. Thank you, Jen, for sponsoring this episode.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you always. Well, I guess I should do patrons before Doug.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, thank them always, too.
Yeah, thank you always, patrons.
Thank you, patrons.
For keeping us going.
Thank you to our top-tier patrons, Sarah, Robert, Jeremiah, Roast Rabbit, a new one, Haley, Whisper Biscuit, Timothy, Dom, Justin, Lily, Jenna, Jen, same Jen as the sponsor this week, and Heather.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to your help, we have reached the point where we can start doing some merch. By this point, we should have received our test shirts, so if they don't suck, that will be live soon.
Yeah, if...
if they do suck, we're going to find something better.
Yeah, if everything goes according to plan, we will have, as of the airing of this episode, a new website, which will have some t-shirts that you can buy, more merchandise coming soon. There will be some blog posts on there, some art you can read about Cricket.
Briefly.
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. Check it out.
Yeah. We're amping things up. So
WTFolklorePodcast.com.
Check it out. We'll remove the merch if it does suck and like panic, find a new place to do it. But hopefully it's good. It's got good reviews, this place.
Just want to make sure it's quality.
Yeah. We don't want to send you something subpar. That's what the show's for. You listen to it all the time.
That's not true.
It is not. I think we have fun.
Thank you, shirts.
Thank you, shirts.
Thank you, shirts.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Doug.
Yeah, then screw you, shirts.
Fuck off, shirts.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, John Waterbottle.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, John Waterbottle.
Thank you, John Waterbottle.
I forgot how we do this. Thank you, Roald Dahl.
Thank you, Roald Dahl.
Thank you, Roald Dahl.
Thank you, Knives.
Thank you, Knives.
Thank you, the Neon.
Thank you, the Neon.
Thank you, the Neon.
Thank you, Yonder Toad.
Thank you, Yonder Toad.
Thank you, Hither Toad.
Thank you, Hither Toad.
Thank you, Bog Family.
Thank you, Bog Family.
Thank you, Stink Drink.
Thank you, Stink Drink.
Stink Drink.
We're about the folklore. That's how it works.
Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, da-ha-di-di-ha-di-ho, tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, she'll live happily ever after.
This has been What the Folklore. Thanks for listening to our show. If you have story suggestions for us, please send them to wtfolklore@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Special thanks to the Brobdingnagian Bards for the use of their song Happily Ever After from their album Brobdingnagian Fairy Tales. If you enjoyed our show, please rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts.